Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Capitals Face Off Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into another edition of the Capitals Face Off Podcast. Happy 4th of July, everyone. Happy holiday weekend. I'm your host, the Capitals correspondent, JJ Regan. With me, he is the Capitals insider. He is the Sancho Panza to my Don Quixote. He is Tarik El Bashir.
I don't even know what to say about that. That was one of your more creative ones. Mm-hmm. I'll give you that. I struggle with my restraint every time you come up with one of these intros. Because, I mean, everyone out there knows I'm the first-round draft pick, and you're like the non-scholarship, walk-on.
Oh,
like, what are we talking about?
So, so if I'm to understand that you are the bust, and I am the diamond in the rough.
Oh, man. I wasn't ready for a comeback.
Yep. All right, let's back up.
All right,
you know who Sancho Panza is? And Don Quixote?
I know Don Quixote.
You don't know Little John from Robin Hood, and then I throw out Sancho Panza, and you're like, hey, that's a good one.
I know who these literary figures are. I just think they're dumb.
Okay. All right. Well, so the Capitals did not take the holiday weekend off.
No.
That's for sure. For a team that didn't have much money to spend on free agency, they sure made a lot of headlines this weekend. We have tons to talk about.
You want
to
hear something funny?
Sure.
You know this, but mm-hmm. The folks out there don't know this. Every Sunday night for the past, 20 years, I've been getting together with a group of friends. We all ride mountain bikes. Mm-hmm. Most of us are in our 30s or 40s and are fat, but like to ride bikes still. And we meet at the trailhead around 6, and we go out. And we have a good time. We might have a Diet Pepsi or so when we come back to the parking lot. I thought for sure I was in the clear when I got onto my bike. I checked my phone one more time, and I was like, something tells me something might happen, but I think I'm good for like 2 hours. I get halfway through the ride. I mean, I'm like in the middle of a forest, And my iWatch is going, my phone's buzzing. I'm like, no, you can't be serious. And everyone on the ride is a Capitals fan, too.
Right.
So I just blurt out, Cousy just re-signed, and everyone kind of cheers, and they're like, well, we'll see you later. We know you got to go. And so I had to pedal so hard. I mean, we're at the bottom of this trail. So we've descended now for like probably 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I've got to go back up the hill. So right now I can barely walk. Nice. Because I was pedaling as hard as I could to get back to my car where my laptop and my air card were so I could write a story. And now the lactic acid in my thighs is almost unbearable. Anyway,
nice.
What do you got?
So a whole lot happened. We're going to do our best to keep this podcast to an hour, but it's going to be hard. People are freaking out. We've got a lot of questions.
Correction, you are freaking out.
And we've got a lot of headlines to talk about. So, Tarik, let's start with Sunday night.
What do you got?
The Capitals re-sign Evgeny Kuznetsov to an 8-year deal that carries a cap hit of $7.8 million per year. And I don't know about you, Tarik, but as soon as I saw that, I thought, oh, well, a trade is imminent at this point. They have to make a trade.
Yes, I didn't know it was going to come 48 minutes after the announcement was made, because I was sitting there in my car writing the story, soaking wet from my mountain bike ride. I get done and I was like, "Ooh, that was actually pretty good." I kind of nailed the whole cap situation and what they're going to have to move some money off the. Oh, come on! You can't be serious. So you and I were texting each other in real time, and I'm like, all right, give me another 20 minutes. I need to retool this story. You're right. I mean, as soon as we saw the numbers come in, 8 years maximum, $62.4 million, we knew that there was going to need to be a corresponding move. didn't have to be. You remember, in the offseason, you can go over the cap by 10%, which you bring into the 80s, but eventually you got to get back under it. That said, the Caps still have a couple of players. A couple of restricted free agents in Andre Burakovsky and Philip Grubauer. They got to resign, and they still got to flesh out a roster with several more players. So I knew a move was going to be forthcoming. I didn't know it was going to be so soon. But as soon as we saw that it was Marcus Johansson, I know anyone who covers the team just went, oh, of course, it's Marcus Johansson. Because he's kind of been the guy rumored to be the odd man out every time you talk to anyone about, you know, how this team might clear up its cap situation.
Yeah, that was kind of my reaction. It's not that we thought he was available. It's just that if you have to make the move,
he was the logical choice.
He was right. He was the guy. A lot of people saw, okay, so the Capitals traded Marcus Johansson. They traded him to the New Jersey Devils for a second-round pick and a third-round pick. Capitals were not in a position where they could take another player. They needed to shed salary. So it's not a surprise to see them get draft picks for it. I saw a lot of people upset about the return. Guys, at the end of the day, the Capitals needed to shed salary, and everybody knew it. I don't think everyone's going to be clamoring to give them a first-round pick when the Capitals are the team going out there saying, hey, guys, we need to shed salary. And a lot of people showed me the Ryan Reeves comparison where Pittsburgh traded a first-round pick. It's different when Pittsburgh is going to a team and asking about a specific player. The team has all the leverage. When you are the team going to another team saying, you interested in Marcus Johansson? You don't have much leverage. And I don't think they would get more leverage by waiting later. I know they didn't have to do this right away.
But you also have to understand, this isn't a surprise to the other teams. They have two or three people in their right. front office who know every single player in the league and what every team's salary yes. cap situation is for the next 5 years.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, the Caps were out there, you know, advertising that they were in trouble and that hurt. Everyone knew. I mean, they just don't talk about it.
So my point is, second and third, I know people see the Ryan Reeves and say, why couldn't they get a first for Marcus Johansson? It's not the other team's job to bail the Caps out. The Capitals don't have the leverage in that situation. So I'm not surprised at the return they got from Marcus Johansson. Tark, what was your reaction Sunday night to ultimately what happened?
It's less than ideal. We knew it was coming. Everyone knew this team was going to have to move a player off of its roster. You know, for 3 years now, they've been spending and building, as Brian McClellan told us on this conference call, to build a championship caliber roster. They knew that the credit card bill was going to come due at some point. Are there things they could have done differently to mitigate, you know, the fact that they had to give away a very, very good player in Marcus Johansson for a second and third round draft pick that didn't even originally belong to the Devils, to the New Jersey Devils? Yeah, perhaps. You know, that said, you can't fault them for doing what they did the past couple of years. All you can fault them for still is not winning a Stanley Cup. If they had won a cup, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. No one would care that Marcus Johansson is going to be a New Jersey Devil because there was a Stanley Cup. The Pittsburgh Penguins have gone through this. The Chicago Blackhawks have gone through this. The difference is they have multiple cups to ease the pain of him being forced to comply with a salary cap, which typically means moving good players to other teams.
Evgeny Kuznetsov, you and I were in the room when someone who's close to the team quoted us a number that was similar to what Kuznetsov got, and we thought that was the first step asking price, aim high, and you and I kind of, I wouldn't want to say scoffed, but thought, okay, so that's the high price. The Capitals are going to lowball, and then they're going to meet somewhere in the middle. They didn't really meet too much in the middle here. Kuznetsov got a big-time deal, 7.8. I was not expecting it to be that high. And part of it, as McClellan said, there was some worry that he would go to Russia. Was that with all the problems of the KHL, was that really a legitimate concern?
For top players, yes, it is a legitimate mm-hmm. concern. For top guys can go to teams that are wealthy, that have wealthy ownership, and pay in hard, cold rubles and you don't have to worry about that check right. not clearing.
Yep.
And I think that was a legitimate concern. I'm not so sure if he would have followed through on it, but
right.
it is leverage. And when a player has leverage, he wields that power. And I don't have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
No, of course not. You use the tools you yeah. have available to you.
No doubt about it. Two or three years from now, he's not going to, I don't think anyone's going to look at that cap hit of $7.8 million and go, wow, Kuzi's way overpaid.
I don't think so either.
You know, you look at the other players, you look at the centermen that are ahead of him, Taves, Kopitar, Malkin, Crosby, Stamkos, Giroux and Getzlaf. Those are the seven centers that are ahead of him. What do they have in common? They're all several years older. Actually, many of them have Stanley Cups, but that's beside the point. I would say he's in that Giroux, Getzlaf, Stamkos
yeah.
conversation.
I would agree with that. And it should be said, we criticize general managers all the time for paying players for what they've done in the past and not what they're going to do in the future.
This is on potential.
This is on potential. That's what you ultimately should be paying for. And him and Orlov are young enough. I know I've been critical of the Oshie contract because I think he's going to end up overpaid at the end of that deal. But Kuznetsov and Orlov, totally different animals here. Very young players cashing in on their potential.
And a salary cap that's most likely going to continue to inch up. I don't think it's going to continue to go up, but it's going to inch up. It's going to inch up. It is going to inch up.
This offseason is going about as badly as it could for the Capitals, realistically. I mean, yes, Kuznetsov could have gone to Russia. Ovechkin could have said, I'm retiring. All that kind of stuff. Realistically, I think this is going about as badly as possible. And I think part of the problem is that it just seems...
Game 7 is part of the problem.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem.
I just feel like this team... And it struck me when we first talked to Brian McClellan at the end of the season availability, how reactive he sounded, his tone was for the offseason. And he has stayed true to that, in that he is react... It seems like his decisions this offseason are more reactive than proactive. I think part of... It's not all his fault. I think they expected there to be more of a trade market and more of a goalie market leading into Vegas. I think they expected Grubauer to go. And even if he didn't, I think they expected there to be more of a market for his services to replace Nate Schmidt. That hasn't happened. That's not necessarily on them. I think they could have done more to protect Schmidt. I've floated out my theory that they could have traded John Carlson.
Something else major happened that you have failed to mention.
What's that?
The players didn't choose the entire 5% escalator clause.
That's true.
That hurt them.
That hurt a lot of teams
that were up against the salary cap ceiling. They were hoping and probably planning on the cap getting to 77 yes. something and change.
That's for sure. That definitely hurt them. I floated the idea before the expansion draft that they could have traded.
Which don't hurt them more?
What?
Losing 2-0 in game 7 against
the
Penguins.
Yes, yeah, we're aware.
All right.
I think they could have been more proactive about protecting Schmidt. Now, maybe it's an overreaction because he's a budding top four. Ultimately, we don't know where that potential is going to lead. He's not as proven as a guy like Orlov, who they just paid for his potential. But John Carlson is a guy entering the last year of his contract. Who knows? Maybe he walks at the end of the year, and then you're having this conversation again. But still, so they're reacting to the loss of Nate Schmidt. They still don't really have an answer there for their top four defensemen. We've talked about this earlier this summer, and we said they may be hurting if they have to put in two rookies into that top six. And today I asked McClellan specifically, is that the plan? And he said, we're exploring other options, but I'm anticipating having two young defensemen in our lineup. I mean, I think Oshie...
Those forwards better back check.
I think,
and hope he better not have any bad nights.
I mean, so let's look. I think Oshie got probably too much. They've lost... veterans.
Too much term or too much money?
Too much term.
Okay.
I think they're going to miss Williams' veteran leadership. They're going to have two rookies in their top six on defense. They signed Devontae Smith-Pelly. I think they plan to plug him into the fourth line, but depth is going to be a concern.
Finally got
year.
A brother. I love it.
Depth is going to be a concern next year. I think we expected them to take a step back, the Capitals to take a step back for sure this offseason, but I think there was... better options for them to pursue than the ones they did, where they essentially reacted, and now they've lost Nate Schmidt, Justin Williams, Marcus Johansson, and they essentially just have a second and a third round draft pick to show for all of that.
So what would you have done differently?
I would have been more proactive before the Vegas expansion draft and traded John Carlson.
But then you're just creating one problem for another.
Yes, I understand that you still have the problem of trying to find another top four defenseman. I also probably wouldn't have given TJ Oshie that much time.
What would you have hoped to get back for John Carlson?
I would have hoped to get a top four defenseman, maybe a younger, maybe like a 24, 25 cheaper guy and a draft pick so that I can save term, not have to see him walk out the door next season, which he potentially could because he's on the last year of his contract. Mm-hmm. And then in 2 years be without both Nate Schmidt and John Carlson. Then you could protect Nate Schmidt and make some sort of
deal. How could you protect Nate Schmidt? If you took back a top four D, then you're protecting that guy.
But maybe then you go to Vegas and say, look, we'll give you, okay, we all knew Marcus Johansson was essentially expendable. Maybe go to them and say, we'll give you Marcus Johansson if you take Phil Grubauer. Mm-hmm. Or if, and by the way, something that people need to get off, I've heard a lot of, why didn't they just offer Marcus Johansson if they take Brooks Orpik? People, Vegas was not going to take Brooks Orpik. They feel the same way about that contract as you do. So why on earth would they take it? But anyway, that's a total aside. I think there are more moves that Brian McClellan could have made, and it seems like he just reacted when he thought Nate Schmidt was going to be the guy, and all of a sudden it was too late. That was just my opinion of how everything went down. I think there were more options to be explored. Now, I don't have the answer.
It takes two teams to tango. Maybe he couldn't. He just couldn't make those moves.
I understand. And trading John Carlson would leave them with a lot of the same problems they have now.
Right.
It's just that in a year from now, you're not without both John Carlson and Nate Schmidt. You're just without John Carlson, and you still have a young, budding Nate Schmidt.
I think you're in the first stage of a fan who's watched a team that dominated the NHL's regular season for a couple of years in a row, and now your team looks like the other teams. It looks like a mortal team. It looks like a mere mortal. It looks like, you know, any other team that doesn't have, you know, third liners playing on the fourth line. And
I expected this to happen. I just wanted them to stick the landing. I don't think they stuck the landing.
I don't think they landed on their faces either. I do think that perhaps maybe being a little more aggressive in the trade market, but, you know, not being on those phone calls and not knowing what else was out there. It's really hard to pan Brian McClellan. And I'm not saying he deserves a pass. But he does have a pretty sterling track record.
Yeah.
Doesn't have any Stanley Cup rings, but, you know, has a sterling track record in terms of being aggressive and getting maximum, you know, getting a lot out of the moves he makes and has made. You know, I understand where you're coming from. I struggle to make a definitive kind of to really say, okay, well, here's how they could have done things differently.
Yeah, that, of course, is the hard part. You can criticize, but it's hard to come up with a better solution.
That, yes. So, I'd be all for going hard if I could lay out, here's where they went wrong, here's where it's not that cut and dried, I don't think. And,
sure.
I still, you know, as I said a few minutes ago, I still think that at the end of the day, this team is still, you know, upper middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference, if not better. You look at the big guns up front, they still got them, they're still in their prime, they're still going to produce. They still have a goaltender who, yes, he was not great in the playoffs, but won a Vezina Trophy, was a finalist last year.
Mm-hmm.
They have a backup goaltender that most around the league will tell you is one of the better backup goaltenders around, and has a defense that even if you have to sprinkle in a couple of youngsters, you know, and as someone told me the other day, no one knew who Nate Schmidt was 3 years ago either. You know, maybe one of these youngsters can kind of come out of nowhere and wow people and develop at the right at the right pace. And are they going to win 50-something games? Probably not. They're going to get in the tournament. And as we've seen in recent years, there's not a whole lot of advantage to being the top seed. It's at Chicago.
I certainly like Bally and Juice, and I think they have a lot of potential. But I am hesitant about a top six that includes both of them, and I think we'll end up seeing a lot of Taylor Chorney as maybe one of the, there are a few going to be a few games where Trotz will put one or both in the press box and say, why don't you take notes tonight?
That's going to happen, but I think Chorney's still going to be your seven to start the year.
I think he's going to see a lot more time this year.
I mean, barring injuries, I think he could play 20 to 30 games, but I think you're going to see Smith Pelly play on the fourth line, and you're going to see Nathan Walker and or Chandler Stephenson get the other spot next to Jay Beagle.
Do you think Chandler Stephenson over Riley Barber?
I think Barber's going to be in the conversation. Mm-hmm. I know they really like him. I think it's going to be a fierce battle in training camp for the first time in a while. We haven't seen that in a while. At training camp the past couple of years, you knew going, I mean, if you were a Hershey Bear, pretty hard to get fired up about training camp because you knew where you were going. It was just when were you going to get there after one or two preseason? It's going to come down to the wire. And, you know, on the blue line, I think you're going to see Bowie, Juice. I think they're one and two. I'd throw Aaron Ness in there because of his experience. I think they're going
to he'll be in the mix.
They're going to go to the reclamation pile and find someone.
Mm-hmm.
There is going to be a signing in late summer of a decent player, not a top 4D, but a decent player who the market kind of cratered, and you know now he's looking for a place to land. He's going to get a minimum deal, and the Caps are going to get a hungry player who's looking to reestablish himself. And so I think you're going to see one young player on D, and I think you're going to see maybe two, but most likely one. And I think amongst the forwards, you're going to see three. You're going to see Jacob Verano get his chance, and you're going to see two other young players on minimum salaries on either side of Jay Beagle.
Two questions before we move on to the players that they lost. One, I think Bowie and Juice are the front runners. Do you see any chance that Lucas Johansson or Jonas Siegenthaler could compete for spots?
Yeah. I mean, and the one thing you and I are going to have to do is we got to remember it's Johansson.
Johansson.
Dude is North American.
Yes.
I keep saying Lucas Johansson too because you're so used to it. But yeah, it's Johansson. Good British Columbia kid. I think there's a chance. He's put on some weight.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that I think fans out there who like to do their roster projections on Cap Friendly, which is one of my favorite sites, one thing you got to keep in mind is who has to clear waivers. Because the guys who have to clear waivers are going to be the guys who stay. The guys who are able to get flushed real quick are going to get flushed real quick. And you know what? Lucas Johansson is going to have a great preseason training camp. His tie is going to have to be straight when he gets on the charter. Like, he's going to have to be almost perfect as a player who was drafted in 2016 to make this roster next year. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying there's other guys who are going to have to be exposed to waivers that are going to be ahead of him in the pecking order. The team is relatively pleased with how Siegenthaler's progression is going. After last year, they were quite disappointed. He didn't play a single preseason game because he was overweight.
Mm-hmm.
He was out of shape. They really were not happy with him last year. He ended up going back to Switzerland, and they are curious. So they want to see what he can do. I think he is another guy who isn't going to be first in line for one of those jobs. I think they want to see what he can do in Hershey first. He needs a little experience, a little seasoning in the North American game.
He needs to learn the North American game.
He even told me, look, there's a lot I still have to learn. Yeah. And, you know, he's in better shape, but I think he even acknowledges there's more there.
More than
yeah, he can even do a little more conditioning-wise. So I would say we're going to see all of those guys. We're going to see Johansson. We're going to see Siegenthaler. We're going to see Lewington. We're going to see Bowie. We're going to see Juice. We're going to see Aaron Ness. I think it's not going to be by committee. But I think all of those players I just listed there are going to be in the conversation, and two of them are going to play a lot more than everyone else, and I think they're going to get to lay the foundation for how much they're going to play in training camp and in the preseason.
Of the players we talked about, Chandler Stephenson, Nathan Walker, Christian Juice, Aaron Ness, and that's it. Those are the players who would have to pass through waivers. There are obviously other prospects, but those are the ones that we talked about. So those are the guys who, where they start the season, will probably be where they stay the majority of the season because of that. And the other question I had, did I hear McClellan right that he projects Ronan to have a second-line role next season?
He said he has second-line potential.
Second-line potential. That would be quite the jump to go from basically full-time AHL player to second-line on the Caps.
He's got the wheels. He's got the hands.
He's got
the shot.
It, but I don't know if we see what's between
the ears.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's not an intelligence thing. It's a want-to thing on a nightly basis. And that's what separates the full-time NHL players from the part-time NHL players from the guys who never get a crack. It's the guys who bring it every single practice, every single game, every single shift. Coaches have to know what they're going to get from you.
Right.
And if a coach has to come to the practice rink or the game rink wondering what they're going to get from number 13, that's a problem.
Yep.
And that was the problem last year.
Yep.
Some nights he was fully engaged and confident and skating and controlling the puck and getting shots. In other games, he was content to loiter around the outside and maybe wait for a quick strike chance. And, you know, as Alan May said a number of times, you know, his play away from the puck, it got better.
Mm-hmm.
Most people thought it was better at the NHL level than it was at Hershey, but
yeah,
they weren't wowed by his attitude when he went back down.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, going back down from the private jets and the fancy dinners on the private jets to riding the bus and, you know, brown bagging it. It was it's an adjustment, and some guys handle it well and some guys don't, and he didn't handle it well and they didn't like that. So, look, he's got the tools. The question is, can someone in this organization reach him on a level where they have to tell him, this is your opportunity, kid. This is it. You want to be a full-time NHL player, it's time for you to put up.
Yeah.
And that means he's going to have to report to training camp in top form. Can't do the conditioning test twice like he did last year.
Right.
He's going to have to pass that test. He's going to have to be great from the first drill until the last preseason game. And then he's going to have to produce. I mean, he's going to get ice time. He's going to have to produce. I'm pulling for him. I hope he does well. But yeah, it's a problem for the Caps if he doesn't.
The Caps need him to do well. All right, let's talk about some of the players the Caps lost. Let's do it real quick because we got to get to the mailbag because we got tons of questions. So the Montreal Canadiens. They have terrible breakout because they have no puck-moving defensemen. So Mark Bergevin said, quick, somebody get me Carl Alzner on the phone. Tarek, what are the Montreal Canadiens do? And I like Carl Alzner. He's a solid, defensive-minded defenseman. But they're doubling down on what hasn't worked for them. I don't understand what the Montreal Canadiens are doing. I don't understand their thought process here.
Mark Bergevin wears really nice suits.
Is that what?
Oh,
you got
sorry,
for
sorry. Am I supposed to bring more? Yeah, who knows what they're doing? I don't know what they're doing. Yeah. I mean, Carey Price signed a monster extension.
Yeah,
that's a lot of money for a goalie. I mean, he's a good goalie, but that's a lot of money for a goalie.
I wish all the best to Carl Alzner. That move makes zero sense.
If you're Carl Alzner, you gotta take that.
Where's the
paperwork? Let me sign it now.
before somebody changes their mind.
I mean, look, Carl's a good player, and assuming his recovery, from the sports hernia and groin and everything continues to heal, and sometimes it takes a full year, he's still going to be a top defenseman in this league,
right?
A good penalty killer, a good minute muncher.
He will be, but that's not what they needed.
That's not what the direction the game is going either. But you know, good luck to Carl up there because. He's also a very private individual, and man, that's going to be a tough market. But I think it'll be okay. But you know what? Let Montreal make some bad decisions. The Caps need all the help they can get. I mean, different division, teams, but still, I mean, same conference. You need all the help you can get.
A lot of teams in the East got better, and I don't think you can say that about the Canadiens. So, hey, that's something. For everyone wondering why the Capitals could not re-sign Justin Williams, the answer is $4.5 million per year salary cap hit for the next 2 years. That's just way too high. Good for him. He's still a productive player, still carries a lot of leadership. That is, I mean, you had to trade away Marcus Johansson for making that much money. They couldn't pay that, afford to pay that, Justin Williams.
Nope.
Kevin Shattenkirk, everyone knew he was going to New York, and then everyone said, oh, not so fast, not so fast. Who knows? Maybe you could go somewhere else. And then he signed with the New York Rangers. So
I knew from the first time I brought it up and I saw that look in his, on his face that was going to be his move.
Of course it was.
He was hoping to get more term and more money, but he realized that to live out a lifelong dream, he was going to have to take less, and he did, and good for him. You just hope he plays well here over the next 4 years so he can get another kind of three-year deal after that that can kind of make up for all the money left on the table, because it's life-changing money, and he definitely left some on the table.
Yeah, and finally, I think the signing of Devontae Smith-Pelly officially spells the end for Daniel Winnick's time in Washington. I don't think there's any reason for them to explore that anymore.
No, and you know, Daniel Winnick was a good soldier for the Capitals.
Good soldier. I mean, he was brought in basically to shed Brooks Laik's contract, and he still provided something
on the ice. Had a great year last year, despite not earning the coach's trust early on. Getting scratched a little bit. Ended up putting up a career high in goals. Good guy to deal with in the locker room from a media perspective, but that job has to go to a $650,000 minimum player. Yeah. It has to. He made over $2 million.
They have no choice.
He'll land on his feet. He'll sign later in the offseason and probably still have a couple of commas in his check, and he'll be fine.
So let's open up the mailbag. Tarik, there's a lot of people freaking out, so we got a lot of questions to get to. First one from Amy Rothenberger. Her question is, why? Obviously a passionate Capitals fan there. Thank you for your question, Amy. Harrison wants to know, do the Caps trade for a top six winger and or top four defenseman before the season starts? When will the Caps sign Berkey? Hey guys, love the podcast. Would love to hear some more episodes. Can't wait for the season to start. I think if there's a trade to be made, I think they would trade for a top four defenseman. I don't think they're going to be in the market for a top six winger at this point.
Well, if you listen to what Brian McClellan said on the conference call this morning, they clearly have adopted the Penguins' strategy here of being strong down the middle and just kind of filling in on the wing in terms of forward. So yeah, I think you're right. I think your instinct there is right. I'd be surprised if they made a move for a top six swinger. I also think if they were going to make a blockbuster or slightly smaller than blockbuster deal and bring in some other players, I think that would have already happened. I think what you see right now, pretty much what you're going to get.
I think Philip Grubauer is still on the trading block, but unlike Marcus Johansson, he's not someone that they have to immediately shed for cap space. I think he's someone that they can afford to wait until somebody gets desperate, somebody gets injured in the season, and then they come crawling to the Capitals saying, what will it take to get Philip Grubauer? So I think they can afford to wait. When will the Caps sign Burakovsky?
Next time I get on my mountain bike, guaranteed they're going to sign Andre Burakovsky.
While Tarik was on his mountain bike, I was celebrating my mom's 60th birthday. So the next time we're both busy is the next time Andre Burakovsky gets the call.
Oh, it's coming. I mean, at this point, I have to imagine that they're pretty far down the road in terms of negotiations with both players. And now there's some cost certainty and they know how much is available. I'm not sure how much more negotiation is going to take place. I would expect both to sign relatively soon.
Nick Dorsey.
There are also deadlines coming up. There's arbitration deadlines. Correct. I know Andre is not eligible for arbitration. There's that deadline coming up, and then there's the tender deadline on July 15th. So deadlines spur action, and we'll see something.
Nick Dorsey, big fan of the podcast. Thanks for doing it weekly. I kind of feel like this Mojo trade has Cats fans overreacting, like the Schmidt situation last week. It's called the Schmidtuation. Anyway. You would think the Caps lost Backstrom or Ovi. Do you think the fans are overreacting to this trade?
I think the fans are, I wouldn't say overreacting. I think it's just like any time something stressful or big happens in your life, it takes a little time to adjust.
Yeah.
The Caps are used to Caps fans are used to seeing a team that is expected to dominate. Now they're seeing a team that is going to have to cross its fingers a little bit in certain spots and hope they're able to get the job done.
Everyone said at the beginning of the offseason that they wanted to see a shakeup of the core. You got it. Now, maybe it's not the guy that you would have expected or wanted it to see, but now the Caps had to make a move because of Kuznetsov. It's unfortunate for Johansson, who's the guy who's sort of...
who was sleeping when the trade was made. Oh, crazy. That'd be the worst thing to wake up
but
to.
Maybe he's not the most ideal candidate, considering his style sort of matches today's NHL. Quick player. He's very important on the power play in terms
of
breaking in. Breaking into the offensive zone.
Very good neutral zone player. Yeah. And you're right, probably next to Kuznetsov in terms of the guy you drop the puck to when you're trying to, you know, get right into a blue line that's stacked with five opposing players. There's two guys on the team that can do it, and it's Kuzi and Johansson. Now they only have one of them.
Now they only have one. So I wouldn't say people are overreacting. I think there are questions.
It's an adjustment period. It's an adjustment period.
You'll have to adjust, and I think there are fair questions to be asked about how the Capitals have gone about this offseason. Could they have been more proactive about it, as we discussed earlier in the podcast? Let's see. Susan, any idea why we have not heard of interest in picking up Grubby? I think that question was answered by Vegas when they took only three goalies in the expansion draft. Just the trade value, the trade market for goalies wasn't there this offseason.
You know, Brian McClellan told me in Chicago at the draft that he thought that George McPhee was going to hoard goaltenders,
yeah,
and kind of deal from a position of strength there. And he ended up hoarding blue liners, mm-hmm, and kind of flipping them from there. And so, you know, I think a lot of people thought that too. It wasn't just Brian
myself
McClellan.
Included.
Yeah, me too. And so that caught people a little bit off guard, but that's the job of George. That was George McPhee's, you know, job, was to, mm-hmm, keep people guessing to a certain extent. And I think he did a pretty good job. Did it catch the Caps with their pants down a little bit? I think they had some time there to adjust, but it probably wasn't a long amount of time. I don't know. I'm not going to be a revisionist, you know, here, but
yeah, the trade market wasn't there, and it got even worse when free agency started, and now all of a sudden all those teams that need a goalie went out and signed one. Now a team like Winnipeg, who went out and signed Steve Mason, would Philip Grubauer be an upgrade for them? I would say probably, but you know what? You just went out and committed to Steve Mason. You're not going to be in a rush to put a package together to bring in Grubauer.
And you know what, folks? In November, if there's a team that thought it was going to contend and their goaltender is having struggles or is injured,
yep,
they know who to call.
Then you're going
to
see
they know who to call,
movement.
Right? Yep. And you're going to see some movement. I'm not sure that. I'm kind of torn on this issue, actually, because you saw what Pittsburgh did last year. Sometimes you need two goaltenders, especially when the good news about Braden Holtby is he doesn't get injured. He's pretty durable. So I would be reluctant to part with the strength of my team, you know, having a 1 and a 1A.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that said, I think that he is the ace up the sleeve that the Capitals can use if they need to make a move here sometime before the season begins or even during the season.
Tarek, I've already made one prediction for next season, and that is if Jacob Vrana does not make the team out of training camp, he gets traded. Here's my second prediction. Philip Grubauer will not finish the season as a Washington Capital. That's my prediction.
Okay.
Take it to the bank.
I can buy that.
Take that for data.
I could buy that. I think this next year could be even more interesting as things unfold for the Capitals, because if this team doesn't, well, let's just say they struggle, mm-hmm, and I have no idea what's going to happen here. Let's say they struggle and they're not progressing towards a playoff berth. I could see them become sellers at the deadline and kind of go further into the retooling area and maybe move a bigger name or another name comparable to Marcus Johansson to recoup some draft picks and maybe some young players, and kind of accelerate that retooling process. That said, if they are in good shape in February, maybe they load up and, you know, try to get a piece, right, so they can make themselves a little stronger. So I think that this is kind of I don't say a make or break year, but it's a year where it can kind of go one of two ways here.
I think for the first time in a long time, this regular season is going to matter for the Capitals, and that hasn't been true of the at least last 2 years.
And it's
going to
be pretty unpredictable, I think.
James Margberger, thanks for all the work you guys do for this team and for the fans. I have a couple of questions. With Marcus Johansson leaving DC, does this allow Burakovsky, if signed, to prove himself as a second line left wing? I think going into the season, they were going to put him either on top or second line. I think he still has more to prove, but I think he showed enough in the playoffs when he got that first line promotion that was the assumption for this season. And he's going to sign. He's a restricted free agent.
Yeah, he has two choices with no arbitration rights. So he has two choices. It's play hockey or don't play hockey. I mean, he's going to choose to play hockey.
Yes.
I think that, you know, he's a player who his game is on the rise. I think when he returned from that hand injury after going through Camp Nemo, we saw a player who was in top physical condition. I think he was at his best in the playoffs. Especially against the Penguins, just ask Ron Hainsey. And I think he is going to develop into a reliable top six player who can score 20 and 25 goals year in and year out.
He also wants to know if we could see another trade on the horizon to dump Cap, maybe Grubauer, for a top four D. I think if they could get a top four D for Grubauer, they would have done it already. I don't see that happening. Another trade, I don't see it at this point. I think the Johansson trade was made with an eye on Burakovsky and Grubauer's new deal so that they wouldn't have to shed any more guys. Because now you're running out of depth.
Right.
Now another trade, you're dipping into the depth of the team to a point where you're really hurting it. So I don't foresee that.
And you're going to see them probably carry fewer than the maximum of 23 players, and players who they can do a lot of paper transactions on when they're not playing. They're going to be, you know, they're going to be like last year. They're going to be skimping. They're going to be, you know, doing every single thing they can to save money against the salary cap ceiling.
Greg Christian, I know the Caps' focus is on signing RFAs, but with Winnick not having signed anywhere yet, do you think they might make him an offer PTO when training camp rolls around? I think I answered this before. I think the signing of Devontae Smith-Pelly closed the door on that. I understand why they would need it, because in my roster projection, I suddenly saw that they were looking at the fourth line with not one but two prospects. And that's a daunting thought to have two prospects on a fourth line, especially for a team that likes to roll the lines as much as possible. That's why you bring in Devontae Smith-Pelly,
who McClellan was not shy about saying needs to get in better shape, and we're gonna do everything we can to help him reach his potential. So
there's a reason he was bought out, but there's also a reason why he went to New Jersey in the first place. He had a tremendous time in Anaheim. He looked great there, so hopefully they can get the Anaheim player, not the New Jersey player.
And, you know, getting back to Winnick, I don't think he's a guy who's going to end up on a PTO. I think he's a guy who's going to be signed in the second wave of free agency here in the next couple of weeks.
Let's see. Gus Samidi, love the show. Thanks to you, Tark, Jill, and JJ for the weekly fill. Also, hope you have a wonderful 4th of July.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gus. Gus has a long email, so I'm going to skim it. Gus talks a lot about how McClellan maybe had more leverage early on in the offseason and didn't act quickly enough. I think McClellan, honestly, if he thought he had to lose Johansson, I think he would have done it earlier. But I don't think he really projected it. And that maybe that's on him. Maybe you could have said, hey, you should have had a better projection on what your RFAs would cost and what it would cost to sign a guy like TJ Oshie. And that's fair. That's a fair criticism. But I think he wasn't more proactive with trying to trade Johansson, because I don't think he came into the offseason with the idea of, I'm going to have to get rid of Johansson. That was my take on it, which seemed to be reinforced by McClellan from his conference call today.
Yes.
Thank you, Tark.
You're welcome.
Also, he says, I know the team loves Orpik, but a buyout early in the offseason also helps to avoid a lot of these cap issues. The Orpik thing we've talked a lot about. I think signing TJ Oshie to an 8-year deal becomes nearly impossible if you buy out Brooks Orpik, considering that was the same similar situation that Orpik had. We're going to sign you to a long-term deal. We know that the on-ice play won't match that cap hit at the end of that deal, but your intangibles and your leadership is going to be worth the price tag. I don't think you can go to TJ Oshie and offer him an 8-year deal and say, "Hey, we're going to stick by this and we're going to stick by you," if this comes in the wake of buying out Brooks Orpik. Now, maybe they could have done more to try to send Orpik to Vegas, but I think it would have taken more than the Cats would have been comfortable to give up.
George McPhee was not throwing the Capitals a life raft.
Right. I don't think that was really an option.
I know there are a lot of fans out there that are on the buyout Brooks Orpik bandwagon, and I get it. He's old. You know, he's and he makes a lot of money. You know, that said, I think, you know, people I've talked to understand the value that he brings off the ice. And they're going to bring in some young players on that blue line that are going to need that steady veteran, you know, in the locker room, off the ice, on the ice, to help them kind of become NHL players. And I think Brooks Orpik is going to be able to bring some of that leadership and some of that, like you said, intangible, some of those intangibles. And that said, you know, spreading out that cap it over more years, you're just kind of punting the problem. I mean, you're certainly saving yourself up front, but you're also just kind of punting that problem down the road a little bit. I don't know. I say they let him play out his contract and get the most out of him. You know, yes, he's what, 37 years old, but or soon to be.
Brooks Orpik is 36. He'll turn 37 in September. Okay, I stand corrected.
Last time I was wrong was like sometime in the 1980s. I will accept your apology. Okay. So yeah, you know, I think that, you know, he's a player who takes very good care of himself.
Yeah.
Very good care of himself. And, you know, they don't have another player of his type on the blue line. I think you just have to, you know, continue to kind of roll up the punches and maybe reduce his minutes a little bit more, but hope that he can bring that other stuff off the ice and help develop a Christian Juice or a Madison Bowie. I mean, if Bowie is going to be as good as they think he's going to be, who better to learn the game from than sitting right next to Brooks Orpik and learning that game in your rookie season from that guy? I can't think of one. Maybe Matt Niskanen, but that's not it.
Travis Reichenbach. Again, sorry for these last names. I'm terrible at these. But his question essentially boils down to, if the Caps thought they were going to lose Nate Schmidt, should they have elected to protect eight players instead of the 7-3-1 option and protect four forwards and four defensemen, including Nate Schmidt? Would they have been better off?
No.
I tend to agree with Tarik here, and here's why. I think they would have, taking the option of protecting eight players, it wouldn't have been Marcus Johansson they would have left exposed. I think it would have been Lars Eller and Tom Wilson.
And they would have lost Lars Eller or Tom Wilson.
And they probably would have lost one of those players. And then they'd still probably be in a situation where they'd have to shed cap, right? Because those guys don't make a whole lot. Let me double check.
3.5 for Lars and 2.0 for Tom.
Yeah, so maybe if they take Lars Eller, maybe you get a little bit of cap relief, but I could...
They made a trade just to protect Lars Eller. That tells you what Lars Eller means to them.
They didn't want to lose the center depth. I think they still consider center depth probably their best asset.
It is their best asset right now.
And so they didn't want to do that. I think it would have been Lars Eller or Tom Wilson. I don't think they would have exposed Marcus Johansson.
Sorry to cut you off, but sure. You know, the one thing the NHL engineered to perfection is the formulas that teams were offered. Every team lost a pretty good player.
Right.
Every team was in a pretty tough spot. I mean, it worked to perfection. You know, Vegas is going to start in a much better place than, you know, other expansion teams did.
Garrett Dolke wants to know, do you think that management thought Grubby would be taken by Vegas? And
yes.
Then whenever Nate was taken, they were in scramble mode. I think that not only did they think that Grubauer was going to be taken, I think that even if he wasn't, they assumed the trade market would be such that they could trade him for Nate Schmidt's replacement, and that did not happen. The market just isn't there for goalies.
Agreed.
His second question is, does trading Marcus almost guarantee Vrana will be in the opening night lineup? If they need to send him down, they can, but I think you need an offensive player to fill that void. It means that they want him to be, but that's up to him. That's up to Vrana.
I think Vrana is going to be on the opening night roster.
I do as well, but you get my point.
I do. I think Vrana gets half season.
Really?
You know, I think it's one of those things where, like you said, he needs to come through for them. And there's going to be no ultimatum given here, but there's no secret that the organization was not pleased with how last year went for him. They wanted him to play more in Washington. They wanted him to be more consistent in Hershey. And I think it's going to be one of those things where you know, prove you deserve to be one of us. And I think you're going to see a highly motivated Verana from day one. And I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be okay. If he's not, watch out. I think, you know, they will cut bait. And like you were saying, he's a candidate to be moved if he doesn't show well early on.
Right. Whitney Wilson.
What's up, Whit? That's my man.
As I see it, the Caps essentially decided that Oshie at 5.75 for 8 years was preferable to Mojo for 2 more years at over $4 million. I guess it's another few years of win now, right?
That is one way to look at it. I wouldn't say you're incorrect in your assessment there, Whit. You know, I know JJ was a critic of the amount of years given to TJ Oshie, given the fact he's 30 years old. But, you know, my argument has not changed. You know, this team is still in win-now mode. I mean, Alex Ovechkin's 31 years old. He's going to be 32. Nicholas Backstrom's not getting any younger. Neither is Braden Holtby. I mean, they still are in a window where if they are going to make any sort of a run, it's got to happen soon. And 4 years from now, it's going to be a whole different ballgame. We're going to be having a whole different discussion. Ovechkin's going to be 36, you know, going into the last, you know, the twilight of his career and his contract. Things are going to be different, and you simply can't worry about that. You needed to get the deal done now so you can stay in that win-now mode.
Greg Christian sneaks a second question in here. Johansson is one of the few Caps who could be consistently relied on to provide net front presence, which, just as an aside, how crazy is that? Who would have thought that 3 years ago that people would be saying that? Anyway, who needs to step up and fill that role now?
Lars Eller,
Tom Wilson, who's probably going to have a top six role now for sure. But you know,
top six?
I think top six now after his performance in the playoffs.
I mean, Brian McClellan pretty much said he's going to be on the third line early. He said it's going to be Lars Eller, Brett Connolly, and Tom Wilson.
I think we could see Tom Wilson on the second line a lot this season. But I'll throw another wrench in there. How about guys like Alex Ovechkin, who need to adapt their game to their aging bodies?
He tried that.
I know.
Excuse me, he tried that last year.
We saw him try that out in practice a little bit. I think he's going to need to do more of that.
We saw it happen occasionally in games, too, but I would like to see more of a commitment to doing it on a regular basis.
Oh, Benjamin Carroll is going to hold the media accountable, Tarek.
What's up, Ben?
Wondering why the media doesn't hold Leonsis accountable for Cat's failures. For several years now, and more publicly last season, players have talked about the lack of commitment from Ovechkin. He's not a good captain. He doesn't work on his game. The list is long. He's the RG3 of the Caps. But the owner won't hear anything negative because he drives the marketing train. His salary is an anchor around the organization, and the Mac is handcuffed. Why is Ted not 100% committed to winning? Okay. A lot to unpackage there. First, Ben, let me say that I asked several players on breakdown day about Ovechkin as leader. Several players who knew that they were on their way out the door and really had nothing to hold back or no reason to hold back. And they were all pretty effusive in their defense of Alex Ovechkin. I think this is an overblown narrative that people like to jump on, and it creates a life of its own. I think it's overblown for sure. I don't know, Ted, like you do, Tarek, but the sense that I get from Ted, and especially from the latter years of Abe Pollin, when it became clear that the Wizards were more his baby than the Capitals were, when Ted took over, it was a little bit of a breath of fresh air because you had a guy who was really committed to the hockey team, which it hadn't felt like for a long time. I think that's probably a bit of an unfair criticism because, you know what, if you think he's all about the nickels and dimes and the dollars, nothing makes you more money than a championship run. I mean, that's just at the end of the day.
You know, I'll tell you this from my first year back on the beat after 4 years of covering the Redskins, Ted's around a lot less, which leads me to believe that he has delegated a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
He's let the hockey folks make the hockey decisions.
Which an owner probably should do.
Absolutely. So I think he's now running this team the way it ought to be around the league, you know, which is letting your general manager and your president and your cap guy manage the personnel decisions. I don't see why Ben you would come after the media for not holding Ted Leonsis accountable. I would say this team's failures in the postseason, I don't think they track back to ownership. I think they track back to the people who work in and around that dressing room, not the owner who has been willing to spend up to the salary cap ceiling every single year that there's been a salary cap in place. I just don't see.
If you look at the team that the Capitals assembled last year, I don't think you can look at that and say the owner isn't committed to winning. That was a hell of a team the Caps put together, and they just couldn't get it done in the playoffs. Patrick O'Connor, strong Irish name there. Hey, guys, love the podcast. Makes my drive for the 4th a little easier knowing I can listen to it. Thank you, Patrick. And a happy 4th to all the Capitals listeners out there. With hindsight being 2020 and the Caps now losing Mojo Schmidt and their handful of U of A's, is it easier to say why didn't the team do something proactive before the expansion draft, knowing that RFA contracts were going to be a problem this summer? Well, I've been arguing that this entire podcast.
Yeah.
But I, to be fair, I don't think he expected the RFAs to run as high as they did.
I think he was clearly caught off guard a little bit, especially by the two Russians who had the leverage of going to the motherland to drive their values up. I think, as we've said a couple of times on this pod, the fact that the players didn't trigger the entire escalator, I think also kind of caught them unawares a little bit. I think they were counting on that, hopeful of that.
One trade he thought could have been explored to Vegas was sending Vegas Grubauer plus Orpik in the expansion draft. Again, it would have taken a lot to convince Vegas to take Orpik. I don't think they were going to be in a rush to do the Caps any favors. And like everyone out there who knows the reasons for why you want to get rid of Orpik, Vegas knows all those reasons too. They're not blind to the cap hit that Orpik brings. So I think it would have taken a lot more than just Philip Grubauer, who they could have gotten essentially for free.
And look at the players that George McPhee got. He wants a young, fast team that's going to be together for a little bit. He wasn't looking to bring on age and salary.
Right. Lily Rosenberg, is this time for a rebuild?
No.
I think there is enough left in the tank of guys like Nicholas Backstrom and Braden Holtby and even Alex Ovechkin. Plus, you have the young core of Evgeny Kuznetsov, Dmitry Orlov, and at any time now, Andrei Burakovsky. I think there's enough there to keep the most of the core intact for another run at it.
Chicago's been doing this for a few years. I know they've won championships, but they've been doing this for a few years, and they still won the West last year. I mean, it's... Right. Do they have a little more depth? Maybe, yeah, arguably, yes. But the Caps are not in total teardown rebuild mode, not even close to it. I would say they're years away from that.
I don't know about years, but...
Years. I mean, I'm saying more than 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. I mean, that's not something that should be entertained anytime soon. Especially, and you can tell that that's not their intentions by the way they're signing players right
clearly.
Now. So.
Clearly. I agree with that, but I do like your theory that maybe if things aren't going well this season,
another round of retooling could occur, sure.
I think you see some trades made at that trade deadline as they sell off some players, but I still think they are a ways off from a rebuild. Because like I said, Nicholas Backstrom is still a great player, Braden Holtby is still a great player, you've got TJ Oshie, you've got Evgeny Kuznetsov, you got a lot of talent there still left to go. This isn't like a Detroit or Vancouver situation where this team won't come close to the playoffs and still refuses to
acknowledge
that they need to make a rebuild. Tarek, we got through all the questions.
Huge.
If you want to have your question read and answered on the next pod, send your question to capitalsfaceoff@gmail.com. And as you've probably figured out right now, I will probably ask any question that you send us, even ones that attack the media, although we prefer praise on our part, usually.
I'll take a little attack every once in a while.
If you like the podcast, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher, and anywhere podcasts are available. And be sure to give us a good rating and review. It really does help spread the word about the show. Wow. So, as I said, the Capitals did not take the holiday weekend off. Hopefully, I will be able to, at least for one day on the 4th. Happy 4th, everybody. This has been a long podcast, but we had a lot to get to. Tarek, thanks for hopping on.
Yep.
Happy 4th to all of our listeners out there. Now let's get the puck out of here.
And be safe with those fireworks if you're in Virginia.